Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Well, it's just another day in New York. The MTA board is meeting right now to approve the latest fare hike. We'll let you know if that vote comes down. The former New York State Comptroller, Alan Hevesy, is in a lower Manhattan courtroom about to be arraigned on corruption charges. We'll keep you updated on the Hevesy appearance. We will let you know if he does, in fact, plead guilty, as expected, or perhaps not guilty. That should be very soon. Andrew Cuomo, you know, as state attorney general, brought these charges just as he's running on a clean Albany campaign. He's been doing this investigation into Hevesy for a long time, but the charges come today. So this could have political ramifications. And as I said, we'll follow the arraignment as it takes place in a lower Manhattan courtroom. And let's stay in that neighborhood right now. A federal judge ruled yesterday that a key witness in the prosecution of Ahmed Khalfan Gailani will not be allowed to testify. You've heard this over the last day, I'm sure. This is a decision that could have far-reaching effects, not only for this prosecution, but for the Obama administration's bid to try Guantanamo detainees in general in civilian court. Gailani is charged in the bombings of U.S. embassies in Kenya and Tanzania in 1998, and his case represents, in a way, a dry run for the Justice Department in their efforts to close Guantanamo and to try 9/11 suspects here in New York. The witness in question, the witness who was excluded, Hussein Abebe, was deemed inadmissible because the information that led to his testimony, the identification of Abebe, was gained during interrogation at Guantanamo that was ruled to be coercive. So here now to talk about the details of the case so far and what this trial might mean for future terror cases are Josh Gerstein, a White House reporter for Politico, and Benjamin Weiser, federal courthouse reporter for The New York Times. Josh, Ben, thanks for coming on. Welcome to WNYC.
How are you doing?
Morning.
Good. Josh, I'll start with you. Tell us about the ruling yesterday. What was the logic behind Judge Kaplan's decision to deny the testimony of Hussein Abebe? How was the testimony deemed a close and direct result of evidence gained under coercion?
Well, I should say at the outset, we don't exactly know because the judge's full opinion is still classified and hasn't been released. So all he did was release like a three-page order, which summarizes his thinking on the issue. But he seemed to suggest that that the government would not have known about this witness unless they had, he doesn't use the word torture, but coerced Gailani through this CIA interrogation overseas. And that because of that, it would essentially violate the Constitution, the judge said, to allow that kind of testimony to be brought in. It's something that lawyers might call sort of a fruit of the poison tree kind of rationale. And if you think about what the consequences might be of a decision like that, you can possibly understand the judge's reasoning. If police say we're allowed to beat up somebody they had arrested and then say, okay, we won't use his testimony, but he did tell us where he buried the body, now we'll go dig it up and use that as evidence against them, you could see how it could encourage law enforcement to use pretty rough tactics.
Right. Well, Ben, would evidence gained during coercive testimony be admitted in a military tribunal? Because that's a key question here, isn't it?
It's a good question, and I have to tell you, I consider myself an expert on the civilian side, less so on the military side. I think it's something that would clearly be litigated strongly, though, by both sides.
Even in a military tribunal,
that's right,
this would be a big point of dispute as to whether the evidence could be admitted.
These cases are very, fact-specific, as they say. What's so interesting about the Gailani case is not only that it has long been seen, as you say, as a kind of dry run, it sort of points the way to the kinds of issues that would likely arise if Khalid Sheikh Mohammed or other 9/11 detainees are eventually brought into the civilian system. I know that's a big issue of debate right now.
Ben, does this ruling mean that a court has determined that the U.S. used torture at Guantanamo Bay? Josh said the judge's, three-page summary of this decision did not use the word torture, but is that in effect what he's saying?
The judge has never made a finding that there was torture or any government misconduct in this case. But for purposes of the legal argument, and the government agreed to this, he assumed for purposes of these rulings that the allegations of coerced interrogation did occur. He made the same assumption for an earlier ruling in which the defense asked that the case be dismissed, that the entire federal indictment against Gailani be dismissed because of what the defense called outrageous misconduct during Gailani's custody within the CIA so-called black sites, where the defense does say he was tortured. Gailani himself, in a filing, said that he was subjected to cruel enhanced interrogation techniques, but we have no more detail than that.
So you are making a distinction there, or saying the court made a distinction between extremely cruel interrogation, or however you put it, which the judge rejected in the bid to dismiss the case altogether, but ruled that interrogation was coercive enough to exclude this witness. Am I understanding you right?
Simply put, the defense has alleged that there was torture and coercion. The government has not taken a position on that, has not affirmed it or denied it. And the court, as the judge mentioned in his short order yesterday, said that he was asked to assume for purposes of deciding this motion that everything Gailani said from the minute he arrived in CIA custody, and that was back in 2004, until the minute he got to Guantanamo, which was in 2006, was coerced. And the government said, yes, just assume he was coerced. How would you decide this case?
Josh, you're a White House reporter for Politico. Is the White House shocked by this exclusion of the key witness in the case? Is Eric Holder, the attorney general, shocked by it? Is it possible to tell?
I don't think they're shocked. I mean, we know this is an issue that they've known was coming down the pike. They, before the decision or the announcements were made, or even the decision to prosecute this case, they gamed out, I'm told, prosecutors gamed out all the various motions that were going to be filed. And as Ben alluded to, in fact, this judge has ruled for the prosecution again and again and again on a whole variety of motions, including one that just challenged how long it took to bring Gailani into the courtroom. But yesterday, that sort of lucky streak in this case came to an end for the government. And although I suppose it's possible they'll get this overturned on appeal. So it's something that the White House and the Justice Department were certainly hoping would not happen. But I can't really say that it could have come as a shock to them.
And as Josh pointed out, you know, this was the third of three major issues that arose. And the judge in the earlier ones, which would have tossed the entire case, the judge ruled for the government. In one, the defendant suggested that his speedy trial rights had been violated because, indeed, it had taken them almost 5 years to bring him into civilian court after his capture. The judge rejected that argument. Again, the defense argued that the alleged torture allegations was such outrageous misconduct that should warrant dismissal of the charges. For very interesting legal reasons, the judge again rejected that. And either of those would have probably ended the case if they were upheld on appeal. This ruling does not end the case. It just makes it a little harder to prove it's going to be a longer trial, but they have other strong evidence.
And listeners, we have a few minutes for questions. If you want to talk to journalist Benjamin Weiser, federal courthouse reporter for the New York Times, and Josh Gerstein, White House reporter for Politico, about the kind of bombshell ruling in the terror trial taking place in Lower Manhattan of Mr. Gailani, who is accused of in connection with the terrorist attacks on the U.S. embassies in 1998 in Kenya and Tanzania. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Or you can post a comment or a question to our webpage at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. By the way, also online on our politics site, we've put up an open thread for anybody who wants to comment on Alan Hevesy, the former New York State Comptroller, being arraigned at this hour. So if you want to comment on Hevesy and issues flowing from that, go to itsfreecountry.org, our politics website. It's a freecountry.org, where you can write about Alan Hevesy. We'll keep you updated on that on the air as that develops in Lower Manhattan. And we're talking about the Gailani trial as well, and taking your phone calls on that at 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And Ben, to follow up on what you just said, I gather that Judge Kaplan has somehow indicated that despite the exclusion of this witness, he does not think that Gailani has much of a chance of going free. Do I understand that correctly?
That's right. In a very interesting and provocative paragraph in his short order, he noted that while he was excluding a key witness, whom the government itself had said was their major witness, there was no one bigger, the judge said that it was appropriate to point out that if Gailani were actually found not guilty, if the government lost the case, his status as an enemy combatant, which of course is where everything began at Guantanamo, would probably permit his detention as something, as the judge said, akin to a prisoner of war until hostilities between the U.S. and al-Qaeda ended. And, it's an interesting kind of safety valve. It's something we heard from time to time in the debate over whether KSM would be put into civilian court. What would happen if he were acquitted? But it is very interesting.
Well, so he's not saying that he's not going to be acquitted regardless of this witness. He's saying he's not going to go free even if he is acquitted.
That's right.
So, some people will ask, well, what kind of justice is that? If you put somebody on trial and they're found not guilty, then you say, well, we can hold you anyway. On the other hand, I wonder, Josh, if you think that's somewhat of a political statement by the judge, because maybe he supports the idea of trying terrorism suspects in civilian court and wants to give the Obama administration some cover, or is that way overinterpreting it?
You can kind of interpret it any way you want. The other way to look at this, I've already seen some critics out this morning, Jack Goldsmith, who used to be a Justice Department official in the Bush administration, saying that line from the judge sort of brings up the question of what's the point? Like, why put this guy on trial if we're going to hold him indefinitely anyway? It is a huge undertaking to put him on trial. There is this question about what the purpose is of pursuing the trial if the person is going to be detained indefinitely in any event. And, the Obama administration believes that they are, upholding the rule of law and the ability of the civilian system to mete out justice in these cases. And obviously there are victims. There were people, many, many people killed in these embassy bombings. So there are victims who would be vindicated by a trial, presumably by a conviction. So those are valid issues, but as you point out, if someone can't go free, even if they're not convicted, it does seem like a heads you lose, tails you lose kind of situation.
So are there ramifications for the administration, do you think, Josh, on how this trial winds up? Let's say he is acquitted, and then they'll have to decide whether to continue to hold him as an enemy combatant. Will this also affect whether they go through with the idea of trying Khalid Sheikh Mohammed or anybody else connected with 9/11 allegedly in civilian court in New York?
I really think it will. I think, as you point out, the same issues would arise in, say, a military commission versus a civilian trial. Some of the experts I talked to said they thought that a military judge would probably rule the same way. But I do think it will affect that decision in the sense that the question really is not so much whether there's a trial, but whether we're going to, in civilian court, but whether we're going to try people at all and whether we're going to bring people from Guantanamo to the United States. And I just think as a practical political matter, word that the only person that the Obama administration brought from Guantanamo to the U.S. had been acquitted would essentially be a death knell for the notion of having civilian trials in the U.S. and might well also essentially mean doom for the administration's hopes, at least some of the administration who hope to bring Guantanamo prisoners from Guantanamo to the U.S. for protracted detention. That was something they planned to do at this state prison they were going to refurbish in Illinois.
We have Josh Gerstein, White House reporter for Politico, who is just talking, and Benjamin Weiser, federal courthouse reporter for The New York Times, as we talk about the exclusion of probably the key witness in the Ahmed Khalfan Gailani terrorism trial in Lower Manhattan. This is in connection with the U.S. Embassy bombings in Kenya and Tanzania in 1998. And Ellen in Harlem, you're on WNYC. Hello, Ellen.
Thank you so much. I admire so much Benjamin Weiser's reporting and didn't see his story, unfortunately. So would he describe the courtroom scene for us? And was there an audible when this decision came down and who was there and all that stuff?
This is why we need cameras in the courtroom, I think.
Here, here.
We need you.
Well, that's very kind of you. The this was a courtroom that was full, but not of spectators. There seemed to be only a few of the cognoscenti. It was mostly journalists, interested parties from the government. There were some spectators, but it was not, as we sometimes see in court, you know, a packed courtroom full of spectators with overflow rooms on big widescreen TVs. The judge, this was the day in which the trial was supposed to get going. The jury was there for the possibility of a final round of jury selection, and they were going to start with opening arguments. And then things sort of went in the other direction. The judge announced that he had made a decision. He, as it's been mentioned, it was just a very short order of 3 pages that he read from the bench. Because this particular decision, like so many, have involved classified information, he could not actually release his full opinion yet, but he said he would be filing it later in the day and that it would go through the normal declassification process that we've seen in this case, and it may be out in a few days or a few weeks after they take all the stuff out about the CIA black sites. But he got his point across yesterday in a fairly dramatic way, and then asked the government whether they wanted to make an application, which was in effect inviting them to stand up and appeal if they wanted to. And the government said it needed a few days to make that decision. So the judge has postponed everything until early next week, I believe Tuesday. And the government right now, today and tomorrow, will decide whether it wants to appeal. And as Josh has said, the appeal would go to the United States Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit. It probably would be done on a somewhat expedited basis, but I think my guess is if they do appeal, it would delay things at least for a matter of weeks. I mean, it could be shorter than that, and it could be longer. But this trial will get stalled. I should say that Attorney General Holder yesterday did say that they do intend to proceed with the trial. There's no indication that that's not going to happen. But the courtroom was just a typical scene of journalists all taking down notes. And as soon as the judge issued his ruling from the bench, everyone ran out of the courtroom so they could report it.
And we will leave it there with Benjamin Weiser, federal courthouse reporter for The New York Times, and Josh Gerstein, White House reporter for Politico.com. The main witness in the Galilani trial excluded yesterday morning, the witness who allegedly provided Galilani with the explosives for the 1998 attacks, but this trial will continue as you've been hearing. Ben and Josh, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you. Take care.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, 2 takes on a splintering America. Eugene Robinson first on the 4 groups of black Americans who only have some things in common. You know, Eugene Washington as a Washington Post columnist, as a regular on MSNBC. And then Dante Cheney on the 12 types of American culture. One measure we'll discuss, how many gun shops versus how many bookstores different communities have. Stay tuned.